Okay, translation given by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. My Lord, Your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach You with sincere feeling. Purport. Being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth, an education, an attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all these material opulences, and this is known as the advancement of material civilization. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing Him feelingly, O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely 1, high parentage, 2, good wealth, 3, high education, and 4, attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. The material covering of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. This is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit for entrance into the kingdom of God. Janmashwarya Shrutashi Bhir Edha Mana Madhapuman Nevar Hatya Vidhatum Vei Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. My Lord, Your Lordship can easily approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach You with sincere feeling. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So thank you for coming today for this morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. A bit nervous, to be honest. It's my third Bhagavatam class, and it's a cliched thing to say, I know, but I really don't feel qualified. But and that's why I don't actually put myself much on the schedule, but somehow I got forced into giving this class after a bit of, you know. Anyhow, so what I'll do is I'm going to keep it nice and simple. It's a very deep verse, lots of things to speak about, but I'll, you know, just for the sake of my own qualification, I can only keep it nice and simple, and I'll just try and, I'll just repeat what Prabhupada told us. Fortunately, actually, yesterday's class by Prabhupada was actually in the same verse, so that kind of helped me. Okay, so a few things to consider here. Kunti Devi is obviously glorifying Krishna, and through it, her own humility is coming out more and more. And the position is that what really is coming out from the verse is that materialism and spiritualism do not really go hand in hand. In the Bible, there's a famous saying that it's easier to thread a camel through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. And obviously here, same things have been said. Of course, Kunti Devi is so humble that she's actually like putting these disqualifications on herself. But of course, we know that that's not the case. Kunti Devi is the most qualified. But obviously, it's kind of like to help us to understand how we look at these things. So I guess the three main points that are coming from this is materialism and spiritualism do not go hand in hand. Secondly, we have to become materially exhausted, and we have to cease becoming materially possessive. It's interesting because actually it's mentioned the word possessive, right? So then that kind of opens up. What is it? Does that mean that we give up all our material possessions, or is the mentality behind how we use those material possessions? So I guess we'll look at that. At the end of the Mahabharata, when Dhritarashtra had lost the war, and he was in his, he was in the kingdom, which is now passed over to King Yudhishthir. Vidura came to take Dhritarashtra out of the palace. And because Dhritarashtra was clinging on to the kingdom at what, no matter what expense. And so then, you know, in the Bhagavatam, Dhritarashtra chastises him greatly, saying that, look at you, your teeth are falling out, your hair's going gray, your face is becoming wrinkled. What do you have? What do you have left for yourself? Just come out of here, work towards self-realization. Give up these material attachments now. And then at that point, it's not in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but there's a pastime that Vidura tells Dhritarashtra. Actually, it's not a pastime, it's like a story, allegory. And he says that there was once famous allegory, I'm sure some of you have heard of it. There was a prince, and he was riding on his horse, riding high and mighty through the forest. And he was very proud whilst he's riding through the horse. And then, suddenly, a tiger comes up from behind and starts chasing the horse. So then he gets the horse to run even faster. In the process, the horse buckles over a log. The prince goes flying and falls into a well. And just at that point, was that to fall to the bottom, he hangs onto a branch that is kind of like going into the well. So he's hanging on for dear life. And then, just when it couldn't get any worse, the tiger came and starts looming over the well. So he's hanging by a branch, and the tiger is looming over him. Then on top of that, he hears a hissing sound, and then he sees that from the depths of the well, a massive python is coming up. So like, you know, precarious position. Then on top of that, he can hear a nibbling sound, and he sees that at the root of the branch that he's hanging onto, there are two rats there, a white rat and a black rat, and they're nibbling away at the branch. And then, just to make it even worse, he hears a buzzing sound. And it sees that by hanging onto the branch, at the top of the branch, there's a beehive. And the beehive is getting disturbed because of the shaking of the branch. So all the bees are coming out. And what are they doing? They're going around the prince now, circling him and stinging him, left, right, and center. So he's basically hanging off a branch, in a well, with a python coming up, a tiger looming over him, with bees stinging him, and a black and a white rat nibbling at the branch that he's hanging onto. And in the midst of all this, from the hive, there's drops of honey coming out. And so what he does is, whilst he's hanging there, he manages to stick his tongue out and try and taste whatever drops of honey that can come across his face. So this is the situation of the material entity. Any ideas who the prince represents? Yeah, the living entity. The prince represents living entity. And yes, you can even say that is Dhritarashtra himself. The horse that he's riding on. There is a famous saying in English, riding on your high horse. Right? So that's basically our pride. Our pride in all our material opulences. But sometimes, after pride comes a fall. So just like the horse, we also buckle, our pride takes a beating. And then we fall into a well. The him clinging onto the branch represents the living entity clinging for dear life in this material world. No matter what happens, a survival instinct is so strong that we just cling on to dear life. The tiger looming over represents what does it represent? Anyway, the python is coming from below. The python represents all impending death. Everyone has to come to the point of death. And the tiger looming over represents the different material miseries that are going to afflict us. Then you got the black and white rat, and then nibbling away at the branch. So obviously black and white, meaning night and day. That day by day, those rats are nibbling at the branch that we're hanging on to. And then you got the bees that are coming up the hive. So they represent the threefold miseries of this material world. The miseries from the body, miseries from the mind, and miseries from other people. And in the middle of all this, the living entity is stuck there with all these problems. And just for the sake of a few material attachments, which are the drops of the honey, he's happy to stay in that position. So it's quite a foolish position to be in. But this is our situation. That no matter what happens, we're just clinging like that. So Vidura is telling Dhritarashtra, this is your situation right now. Get out of it. Get rid of all your material attachments and just work towards realization. So ultimately, in Krishna consciousness, we can talk a lot about dovetailing our material desires. We talk about the yoga ladder, how in the initial stages we practice karma yoga for Krishna, we work for Krishna, but we give some results to Krishna, we offer some of it to Krishna, and some of it keep for ourselves, the sakam level. And then once we get more advanced, then we get to the nishkam level, where we give all the results to Krishna, but we're still attached to the way we do devotional service for Krishna. Right? But ultimately, at the end of the day, when push comes to shove and the cookie has to crumble, then really, we have to have a cut-off point where it goes beyond just amalgamating our desires. We have to basically give everything for Krishna. And there has to be no material attachments for ourselves. So initially, yes, we can practice that verse, famous verse from the Puranas, Akamo sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajata purusham param. In the initial stages, yes, whether you have many desires, whether you have just desire for liberation, or whether you have no desire at all, then fine, you can come to Krishna. But ultimately, we have to come to a point where enough is enough, enough even trying to align our desires with Krishna, we have to come to the point where there's more material desires. But for that to happen, we have to be completely materially exhausted. Exhausted to the point where even associating with other people who have material desires is going to be dangerous for us. Equivalent to drinking poison, as Mahaprabhu told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in the Madhya Lila, Nishkinchanasya Bhagavat Bhajan Mukhasya Param Param Jigamasyor Bhava Sagrasya. Okay, that Mahaprabhu is telling that even for a person who's designed to cross this material ocean of birth and death and just have pure devotion for Krishna, just seeing another materialist indulging in his material possessions is the same as drinking poison willingly. And of course, through the whole scriptures of the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, the whole point as this human body is meant for spiritual cultivation, going beyond the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Our intelligence is meant for developing spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, what's the point? Again, in the CC, it said, Atmindriya priti vancha tare boli kam, Krishnandriya priti iccha dhore prema nam. The desire to gratify one's own senses is called lust, but the desire to gratify Krishna's senses is called love. Often what happens in devotees' lives is to get to this point, we need to come to the edge. There are many edges in our spiritual life. What you'll find, especially in Kali Yuga, when people come to Krishna consciousness, They come because they experience some level of material exhaustion. That's why one of the four reasons for coming to Krishna, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam, that famous verse, is material distress. And that's related to the sense of exhaustion. But the problem with exhaustion is that when you then come, then that sense of inspiration that brought you here, that level of exhaustion that you experienced, it starts to wane and you become comfortable again. And then what happens? Those material hankerings, they start creeping back. Yeah, so what happens in Krishna, throughout your whole life, he'll put you through more and more states where you come to the edge. So surrender is not just one time that you do a surrender and that's it, Hari Bol. No, the surrender, opportunity for surrender has to come again and again and again. And that point where you get pushed to the edge is something that will happen recurring through your life. Of course, it's dependent on what you can take. So for example, Draupadi demonstrated a very, very intense way of being pushed to the edge. She was in the middle of arena, the royal arena, and she was about to be disrobed by Dushasan. So her edge was something I don't think most of us can deal with, where she was about to be humiliated in front of the whole royal assembly. But then she exemplified at one point when she was holding onto a sari, but it wasn't working. It said in the Mahabharata that what can Draupadi's strength do against the lion-like arms of Dushasan? So she just lifted up her hands, and as Prabhupada said in this purport, she just shouted, "Oh Govinda, hey Govinda, hey Govinda, hey Krishna," right? Arjun also came to the aid. He also got pushed to the edge at the start of the Kurukshetra war. He saw all the loved ones in front of him on the battlefield. He's about to be responsible for a battle, which is responsible for the destruction. Okay, this is an interesting thing actually, because most people say it's 640 million people, but actually, I found out it's more than that. It's from the one of the Paravas of the Mahabharata. Do you know, this is actually quite inconceivable. Did you know that in the Mahabharata war, it was actually 1,640,000,000 people died in that war? So imagine, Arjuna is about to take part in a war that's going to result in a massive apocalypse. Naturally, he's also at the edge. Should I fight this war? Should I not? Then obviously he gives those four famous reasons as to why he shouldn't fight the war. Again, he got pushed to the edge. Prahlad Maharaj as well got pushed to the edge, right? So all these things can help us to kind of like get rid of that final material hankerings, that final tipping point of becoming fully materially exhausted. Because ultimately coming to Krishna, it is like an all or nothing game. If we really want to get to Krishna, we have to give up any remnants of material possessiveness. We of course know that verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Yehim samsparsa jaboga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta konteya na teshu ramate buddha. An intelligent person does not take part in the source of these material miseries. He doesn't even indulge in all these material hankerings, these material possessions, because he knows that it's just going to result in misery. Okay, but here's an interesting thing. Krishna can push us to be materially exhausted. He can help us, but ultimately this sense of material exhaustion has to actually come from us. And I guess this is going to be one of the topics for today's discussion, is how do we become materially exhausted? Because it almost seems like it's something that happens to us. Like when our karma becomes too much to bear, then we become materially exhausted. Or we try and endeavor for something and it fails again and again and again, then we become materially exhausted. But is there anything that we can do to make ourselves call it a day? See, the thing is, when you look at the world around you, we talk often about people suffering and that can bring people to Krishna consciousness. Yes, but then no as well. Because actually, there are a lot of people out there who are suffering way worse than what I think this is even discussed in the quick Q&A session a couple of days ago, that there are actually people a lot worse than people coming to Krishna consciousness who are suffering like hell. And yet, they don't come to Krishna. Right? The level to which your mind can sink down to is limitless. The mind's depravities are limitless. And of course, Maya's ways of slapping us are also limitless as well. Prabhupada said this, right? There's unlimited ways in Maya can slap us. And yet still, despite all of that, a lot of people don't come. So it has to come from us. Prabhupada said, yesterday's lecture, we have to voluntarily give up this material hankering. We have to voluntarily develop this material exhaustion. And that's where the problem is. Because the material attachment, is so ingrained within us in the human condition. You can say it's pathological. In fact, there's a famous line, Pumsa Shtriya Maithuni Bhavam. It all basically comes from there. It comes from the root cause, which is the lust, manifested initially in sex life. Of course, people may argue that, hang on a minute, not everyone's like just lustful, not everyone's so sexually driven. True, but what happens as you hang around more in the material world, what happens that lust, the sex drive might get sublimated or it might get manifested in different forms, but it's all springing from the initial stage. And obviously this is something that's even actually specified in the scriptures, this material possessions and even material attributes. Here it's speaking specifically about the positive things like high education, bodily beauty, opulence, great parentage. Even when you come to devotional service, these material attributes can cause issues for us to the point where it's even part of our bhakti process to be wary of these things. In the anartha nivritti stage of devotional service, there are 9 stages. One of them is anartha nivritti, which is removing of the unwanted things from the heart. The anarthas can be divided into 4 categories, 4 othas. And one of the othas is called bhakti otha. Bhakti otha means the material qualities that you get from practicing bhakti. Often, do you ever find that when you come to devotional service, you pick up new skills and talents that you may not have had before, or you discover new qualities that you may not have had before? Suddenly you realize Bhakta Bob comes in and he's amazing kirtaniya. He never knew he had such a great voice, right? We have to be careful that this does not become an otha for us. Otherwise, we're going to be in a bit of a pickle. Not to mention the material qualities that we have from before that may come with us. Sukrit otha. These are the anarthas coming from previously performed pious activities. These are also material possessions. Like, let's say, before you came to Krishna consciousness, you were an exceptionally talented speaker. You're using Krishna service, but you got to make sure that you don't get attached to that, and that does not become your identity. Even before anartha nivritti, even in the previous stage to that, when you're doing bhajana kriya, when you're starting off just performing activities for devotional service, one of the unsteady stages of bhajana kriya is called tarangarangini, where actually you get attached to the material perks that come, the little skills and things, the talents that you pick up. And of course, this is something that applies to every single one of us, right? For example, we have a great dramatist in our crowd here. He's Grace J. Krishna Prabhu. Again, this is a very great talent that he's got, but of course, not with Jai Krishna Prabhu. You know, he's advanced devotee. He does not attach to it at all. But we have to be careful that, let's say we come to Krishna consciousness and we're great actors, that we have to make sure that that doesn't become a thing for us. Or, for example, we have Sutapa Prabhu. He's also a very great speaker. Again, he's beyond it. We have to make sure that if we end up having a skill like that, that doesn't become like an issue for us. We all have our own mainaks in life. Everyone's heard of the word mainak before. So mainak, it's said that when Hanuman jumped from Lanka to, from India to Lanka, what was the first obstacle that came up from the ocean? Huh? Yes, there's a massive golden island, golden mountain that came up. And this mountain, she said, that for some reason, this mountain's got female persona, because most mountains have got male personas for some reason. Anyway, this mountain's name is Mainak. And she says to Hanuman that, Hanuman, I can see that you're doing a tremendous feat, but whilst you're jumping, why don't you just stop for a minute and just rest on my body? And Hanuman's response was, no, I have a mission to do. I'm going to focus on this mission no matter what. So what does this represent? That before bhakti yoga, we have many mainaks in our life, many material attributes that we have to contend with. And even after coming into Krishna consciousness, we all have to go through our mainaks. Right, we all have to go through material obstacles, which can seem like they're positive things, but they can end up becoming deadly for us. Hanuman, if he ended up lying, resting on that mainak, he might have ended up just staying there and forgot about his mission. Okay, Kadamakana Maharaj once said that again, coming back to the whole notion of getting voluntarily giving up these material attachments, it's so pervasive that it's almost like the living entity is getting pricked by Durga, who's obviously Maya Devi. The living entity is getting pricked by Durga's trident again and again and again. And yet, what did the living entity do? What does the living entity do? Just comes back for more and more. Like an abused lover who willfully goes back to an abused relationship. Or like a drug addict that even after knowing the harmful effects of it, keeps going back. Okay? So we've established the position and the issue of the material attachments. We've looked at the problems that arise from material attachments, or the pervasiveness of these material attachments. Now let's look at the consequences. The material hankerings are impossible to satisfy. They won't get fulfilled. They won't last. They won't live up to their value. There'll always be a flip side. Sukha dukkha. This material world is a place of happiness and distress. For whatever material happiness you get, you will get distress for it. Sometimes you might have a really good material life, one life, but then you might have to get some sort of reaction for it in the next life where it goes down. You can't constantly stay in a situation which is performing good karma life after life after life. At certain points, you will end up doing some things to create bad karma for yourself. Sometimes you can even see it in one life. For example, I'm sure a lot of people of like my generation, when you're growing up, we used to like, you know, like appreciate the music of Michael Jackson. And obviously when you're growing up, you used to see Michael Jackson as the king of pop. And then obviously, you know, people used to like hero worship him and things like that. One of our friends used to be in ashram, he still hero worships Michael Jackson to some extent, to the point we actually use his Michael Jackson's moves in kirtans and stuff. That's beside the point, however. But anyway, so yeah, Michael Jackson. So he was obviously known as the king of pop, very famous. Everyone loved him. And so he had all that happiness. But then later in his life, the distress came. He went from being king of pop to becoming Wacko Jacko. Ended up being vilified, ostracized. He ended up dying bankrupt on drug overdose. Probably went through so much stress. So we can see that the material happiness that you're going to get is not going to fulfill you. Even for someone like in the material life, you get people like that famous actor Robin Williams, right? He had everything going for him. Famous actor, very talented. But then he committed suicide. So therefore, the material attachments we have, they're not going to fulfill us. There is always going to be an issue to them. There was a psychological study recently done by a professor called Manfred de Vries. And he talked about the retirement syndrome, the psychology of letting go. And I thought it's interesting because this can very much relate to the material attachments. And it's related to people in positions of power, people working in like companies, CEOs, executives. What happens is for them, one of the most toughest times in a person's life is to let go of their material situation, their material, because they identify so strongly with that. It's because what happens, especially when you're in a material situation, you get certain perks from it, especially a good material situation like bodily beauty, high education, great opulence, right? What happens, you get so used to that situation, they almost provide you this endless supply of like narcissistic fuel. You know, like to narcissistic means to fuel, to keep that false ego going. You love it and you don't even realize you love it. And as soon as it kind of comes out of your reach, then you flip out and the effects can actually be devastating, actually. Because you're constantly relying on that constant affirmation, that constant respect, that constant attention. And when it goes, it's horrible. That's in terms of position and power. To the point that in companies, what happens is when a CEO is about to leave, he might put on the external face of being very happy about it, but internally, he's actually seething with rage. To the point where he actually ends up undermining the new CEOs coming through. It's a term called generational hatred, where actually what happens when the new people come into the company, the seniors will actually try and put down the new people as much as possible. Look, we did all the achievements. What can you guys do? I see the new crop of employees coming through. They're just not good quality. They're not doing it properly. In my day, we did it like this. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokul Nanda Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaunitai Ki, Pulu Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah. So then like this, there's a whole kind of like a psychological breakdown that happens. It leads to a lot of depression. And this can apply to the other aspects as well, not just position. Bodily beauty, high education. In that psychological study, this one president of France called Valéry d'Estaing, he wrote his memoirs. And he said that when he first started looking in his mirror, and in his sort of mid-30s, he saw the light was shining upon his face whilst he's looking in the mirror, and he can see that the light was going through his hairs, and he can see the baldness coming through, and it really freaked him out. And then from that point on, as time goes by, the body started sagging. His physical abilities, his virility started to go down. And so then what happens is he still started to still wore the same suits that he wore when he was like in his mid-30s, when he was in his 50s, just to project the image that he's still young. And in his mind, he still conditioned himself to believe that actually he's still young and that people still see him as young. Okay? So when a person ages as well, if they're so used to being beautiful and young and virile, then when you do start aging, it's a devastating situation to be in when you see that your bodily attributes are starting to crumble away. Right? So loss of position, loss of beauty, that can really, really affect a person. Loss of power. There's a precedent, again, from the article, there's a precedent called Lyndon B. Johnson, and he confided that near the end of his presidency, he used to have nightmares about his subordinates who are conspiring about how they're going to share his power after he retires from the presidency. And he made a remark that just when he after retired, he made a remark that 5 hours ago, the whole world listened to a single sentence I said. Now, no one even listens to me, even if I speak for 2 hours. Right? So all these things happen. They're so deep-seated. Now, of course, these we're talking about kami people here, right? The loss of beauty, how it can affect us. Often that's why people cling on to power when they get older and older. I'm saying in kami world. You see that with old politicians, like in third world countries, they just stick to their power no matter what. Like Robert Mugabe, right? He recently got ousted and he was in that power till he's like 90 something years old. Because what happens when your body starts to degrade, you got nothing. So then what you do, you compensate from the material position you get. That in itself is like your aphrodisiac. That is your sex life now. Because at that time, you can't have the physical aspect of it. So you make it so that it's this way. So, good thing is, as devotees, we're all going to go through this. We're all going to go through, for men, midlife crisis. For women, menopause. Obviously, for both genders, there'll be like loss, change in positions, change in services, all these things. The thing is, because we've got the philosophy to set us right, thankfully, we don't have to go for the same level of psychological devastation that materialistic people have to go through. But that doesn't mean that these things don't affect devotees as well. All the things that we mentioned in the psychological article, I was thinking, you know, all these things do affect devotees. They will go through all these things. So therefore, even when you're in devotional service, if you're too attached to your mainarks, right? We've all got our own mainarks here. If you're too attached to your mainarks, then these things will happen to us. Then the consequences get even more subtle. Because amongst devotees, we often also keep up the appearance that we're doing fine. Because, you know, it's like devotees are here to inspire each other. But if we don't actually deal with our material attachments properly and develop that level of material exhaustion, what happens is those material attachments, they become more subtle, right? They become deep-seated, but they manifest in more subtle ways. And what happens, they actually become blocked in our spiritual progression. So Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj said that it's like you got the wedding boat and it's rowing all night long. And in the morning, when you wake up, the wedding boat hasn't gone anywhere. Why? Because it's still stuck to the anchor. What's the anchor? It's our material attachments, right? Or the same, similarly, another analogy that Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj gave is like worms in the stomach. You're eating, but you're not getting nourished enough. Why? Because the worms are eating away. Those material attachments that we hang on to, if we don't exhaust them properly, they will eat away our nourishment, the spiritual nourishment they're trying to get. And what happens? We end up starting to develop secret bad habits. We end up becoming like Jekyll and Hyde. His Holiness Kadmakanna Maharaj, a couple of years ago, it was actually a manner class. He gave the example of the inner Schweinhund, right? I don't know if I'm saying it properly. Well, Mataji's German. I don't know if I'm probably saying it wrong, but Schweinhund means the inner pig dog, right? If we don't address our psychological issues properly, our material attachments and integrate them and actually exhaust them properly, what happens? That inner beast develops within us. So, for example, Maharaj gave the example of like devotees will come to the temple and act like super humble Vaishnavas. Oh, Prabhuji, you're amazing. Let me take the dust of your lotus feet and let me just bathe in your, like, I don't know, the waters after you've taken a bath or something, right? But then what happens? Then Maharaj would actually confide, I can say this because Maharaj said in the class, that he'd get like letters from the spouse of that devotee saying, Maharaj, can you please help me? Because this devotee, my partner's abusing me at home and treating me like a doormat. So hang on a minute, there's like a massive Jekyll and Hyde thing going on. Like at the temple, you're acting like proper nice and humble, like a Vaishnav. Well, like a external Vaishnav at least. But internally, the material attachments, because you haven't addressed them and exhausted them, they manifest and you're like some crazy Dr. Hyde at home or something. So therefore, we have to make sure that these mainaks are dressed properly, exhausted, so that they don't become like something that we end up like carrying with us and manifest in deviant ways. Okay? And we also must make sure that we don't get too attached on the mainaks, and especially when it comes to service and stuff. Because you know what's one of the best ways in which Maya destroys us? Is by first having us glorified for our service and then taking it away. We get so fried out when that happens. And we end up not just leaving that service, we might even end up just thinking, you know what, forget Krishna consciousness. I'm out of here. We forget why we did that service in the first place. An example of that, of course, is Mantara. She got attached, everyone knows Mantara, right, from the Ramayana. She got attached to a position because of the favoritism that King Dasharatha was showing her master, Kekai, right? Kekai was actually Dasharatha's favorite queen. And because of favoritism, Mantara herself got boosted up from that. And that ended up destroying her. And of course, ended up obviously pretty much destroying Kekai as well. So we have to be wary of the secret habits that arise from material attachments. Our private time with Krishna should actually be one of introspection. It should be more than our public time. Otherwise, what will happen as time goes by, if we do not address our secret issues, then externally we'll get more and more better at presenting ourselves as sadhus. But internally, we'll become more and more disconnected from what a sadhu actually is. So 10, 20, 30 years down the line, externally you can perfect the art of what it means to be a complete Vaishnav. Saying all the right things, behaving exactly the right way, but internally, your mind could be completely somewhere else. And then that leads to the next stage, which is Sutapa mentioned last year in a class, that you end up developing the affliction of psychological atheism. You externally act like a devotee, but internally, you don't really believe in God. Because through your actions, you actually show that you don't believe in God. Okay? And then what happens at the time of death? Then the real essence will come out. Just like, have you guys seen this film called The Great Escape? No? Alright, okay, don't worry. Anyway, in this film, there's these British spies and they're pretending to be German soldiers. And so they're basically pretending to be German, speaking German, everything like that. And then at one point, it was an intense situation. And you know when you're in an intense situation, like death, then the actual real nature comes out. And the intense situation, one of the German commanders said to these soldiers, undercover spies, he said in English, thank you very much. Right? Because all this time they've been speaking German. And at that point, literally in a very plummy, 1930s English accent, they went, you're welcome. And as soon as that sees him. So basically their real nature came out under intensity. So we can fake being devotees for as long as possible. At some point, it will all come out in the wash. So therefore, it's very important that we develop this sense of material exhaustion. Otherwise, those material things, they'll keep coming back and back. So, we've looked at the situation. We've looked at the problem. So now let's look at the solutions. Krishna helps us. Definitely helps us to develop material exhaustion. There was one question by Yudhishthir in the 10th canto. A famous question, I mean, you all probably know the answer to this. That why is it that your devotees are always left materially impoverished? Why is it that they all end up being Nishkinchana? Not me, obviously, but I'm a brahmachari, so in one sense, I'm a material impoverished, I guess. Well, anyway. So the point is, why are they all materially impoverished? And then what does Krishna say? He says that because I adore them, I take away everything. Just to keep them on the edge. You know, we talked about Draupadi being on the edge, Prahlad Maharaj being on the edge. You got no other hope, just Krishna. So Krishna actually helps us in that respect. But I think we can open it out. We've got 5 minutes left. So we can open up as to what other ways can we actually develop this sense of material exhaustion. I mean, there's two things that I kind of came up with. Three, actually. One is, of course, introspection. If we reflect on the situation, the futility of the material world, by taking the shelter of the scripture and seeing this whole situation for what it is, that can definitely help us. One is, of course, chanting. Narottam Das Thakur actually says that the antidote, the fierce desires of our mind and senses prohibit complete surrender to Krishna's service. But the antidote for that poison is continued chanting. If we're sincere, the Lord's pure names will remove our faithlessness and offenses so that we can eventually relish the best benediction as our most precious asset. Chanting is like quicksand. Prabhupada says, not chanting, sorry, this material life is like quicksand. Prabhupada says that those who are materially in a good situation, they can't chant with the same level of desperation. So it says that in the material world, everything sinks. You can't stay in mode of goodness forever. Eventually, you're going to go to mode of passion, mode of ignorance. And once you're in mode of ignorance, I mean, you know, the levels of depravity can just go on and on and on, right? So it's like sick quicksand, because quicksand sinks, as we all know. The living entity is in this material world, and it's sinking, life after life, going more down. We were Brahmas at one point, and now we've come to this state, right? So quicksand. And then what's the worst thing that you can do in quicksand? Right, very good. Move, trying to struggle yourself. And this is what the basic of the Prabhupada said yesterday. It's like a high fever, and you try and increase the fever, then actually you're making the situation worse. So trying to use your material abilities, your material attributes, to try and get yourself out of the quicksand is basically like moving more and more. You're going to end up sinking more. So best is, put your hands out and just cry for help. So for the living entity, that's basically our situation when we chant. It should be in the mood of, look, I've got nothing here. There is nothing I can do to get myself out of this quicksand. Let me chant and cry for help. And if you cry loud enough, then thankfully a savior will come, chuck out the rope to you, the rope of the scriptures, the rope of the parampara, which you grab onto, and then the person at the end, who is of course Krishna, will pull us out. So chanting is one aspect that can help us to develop the material exhaustion. And now there's association. If we associate the right people, then we start to develop their mentality. We start to develop their consciousness. Mahajano yena gathasa pantaha. Right? If we follow in the footsteps of the great Mahajans, we can actually realize the futility of the material world. We have classic examples in the scriptures of Raghunath Das Goswami. He gave up. He was a multi-billionaire. If we were to calculate his wealth in modern times, he was a multi-billionaire. But just by a moment's association with Mahaprabhu, he basically decided that I'm going to leave this thing. Gopal Bhatta Goswami. One conversation that Mahaprabhu had in his uncle's house, Venkata Bhatta, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami was sitting there, and he said, this is it. I'm leaving this. I'm going to follow Mahaprabhu. There's so many examples, so many of Prabhupada's disciples. They came from rich families like Giriraj Maharaj, Mother Urmila, Sachinandan Maharaj. They all came from very, very wealthy families, you know. But they left it all because just by moments association, they realized that this material enjoyment is completely futile. Okay, so these are certain things that we came up with. Ultimately, we surrender to Krishna. We serve Krishna with love. And whatever material qualities or lackings we have, it shouldn't matter. Like Kubja, she was lacking in beauty. Gajendra was lacking in knowledge. Dhruva was lacking in maturity. Because they served Krishna with love, then Krishna gave them the ability to get to him. So we shouldn't worry about hanging on to our material attachments, even within devotional service. So I'll leave it there, because time's almost finished. Well, I was going to say we can hand over to questions, but let me ask you guys a question instead. How do you guys feel we can become more materially exhausted? Any thoughts, Vaishnavs? Yes.